Welcome to All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich. The Oscar nominations were announced yesterday, and the film industry is buzzing with talk of surprises and snubs. Also, the Golden Globe Awards will be handed out this weekend, and some say the Globes are a good predictor of potential Oscar winners. Today, we have a panel of local movie critics who will give their thoughts on the Oscar snubs and surprises, and will make some predictions about the winners. Also, what Oscar-nominated movies are still in theaters that you can go see? Joining me in the studio is Hope Madden, film critic for The Other Paper. Welcome, Hope.
Thanks for having me.
And Melissa Starker, freelance film critic. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also Brad Keefe, he's the film critic for Columbus Alive. And listeners, what was your favorite movie of the past year? Was it nominated or was it snubbed? Call 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Lincoln, the movie Lincoln, leads the Oscar ballot with 12 nominations, including Best Picture from and Daniel Day-Lewis for Best Actor, Sally Field and Tommy Lee Jones for Supporting Actress and Actor. In this scene, Tommy Lee Jones plays Thaddeus Stevens, who is arguing in favor of the landmark constitutional amendment to ban slavery.
How can I hold that all men are created equal when here before me stands stinking the moral carcass of the gentleman from Ohio, proof that some men are inferior, endowed by their maker with dim wits, impermeable to reason, with cold, pallid slime in their veins instead of hot red blood? You are more reptile than man, George, so low and flat that the foot of man is incapable of crushing you.
How dare you?
Well, he's definitely showing in that clip that the politics of 1865 are very similar to how some view the House of Representatives today. So, Lincoln, 12 nominations. Is this a surprise at all, Hope? What do you think? Is that expected?
Oh, I don't think so, yeah. I think that, I mean, it's a powerhouse film. It's incredibly well made. And, you know, as soon as you see Daniel Day-Lewis, you realize he's clearly going to be nominated for an Oscar. But I think, you know, it's a long film and it's very talky, and yet it didn't feel that way. It was fascinating from beginning to end. They managed to generate tension regardless of the fact that we all know how it ends.
Which is a theme this year.
I know. And, you know, it wasn't just Daniel Day-Lewis, all of the supporting turns. And there were dozens of them. They were all really spot on. So, no, I don't think I think everybody expected Lincoln to really get a ton.
Well, we should just take a moment and list off the Best Picture nominees. That way our listeners, just in case they missed it yesterday, know the movies that we're talking about. And obviously throughout the whole show, we'll be bringing these up in and out because a lot of them have multiple nominations. But the Best Picture nominees are Amour, Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Django Unchained, Les Miserables, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook, and Zero Dark 30. So of those that I listed right there, that was 9 nominations. 9 nominations. They're allowed to nominate 10,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is the second year they've done that. And it's I don't understand, because it just feels like a total slap in the face of every film that didn't make it because they leave one empty slot.
Now, is it, I think, and I could be wrong, I think it's because the vote tabulation is kind of like the Football Hall of Fame, where you have to hit a certain threshold with a number of votes before you can be included, and so that's why there weren't 10.
Yes, I believe that's how it works. That it's not just the top 10 that got the most votes, that they have to fit into a certain algorithm and work.
So, of those pictures that I listed, a lot of great movies. We'll talk about them. A few of them are still in theaters, so you'll be able to see them. A few of them haven't even been in theaters yet, so you'll be able to see them if they make it here eventually, Amour being one, right? But I think that my critics that I have in the studio right now are going to agree with our caller, Neil from Columbus, about who belongs in that 10th slot. Neil, what's your comment?
Sunrise Kingdom.
could you repeat that again? Sorry, we couldn't hear you at the beginning, Neil.
Yes, Moonrise Kingdom was one of my favorites this year. It's a sweet movie. It's got a different feel and vibe than a lot of mainstream movies, but, you know, totally accessible. it would have been nice to see some more attention lavished on that, I think.
All right, so Moonrise Kingdom, the reason I bring that up, and thank you very much for that call, Neil. We appreciate it. The Central Ohio Film Critics Association, of which my three panelists are proud members, picked Moonrise Kingdom as their film of the year. So are you
because
all...
we are better than the Academy of Motion Picture Sciences. Let's just say it.
Which just gave it that token original screenplay nomination that it gives films that it doesn't know what to
that
do
is,
with.
That, usually,
elsewhere.
If you look over the years, original screenplay winners are the actual de facto best movie of
like
the year,
Pulp
I think,
Fiction.
Most of the time. Yes.
Right, exactly. There are so many times where that's the case. And, you know, and it shouldn't have just been nominated for Best Picture. It should have been nominated for Best Director. And honestly, the performances across the board were outstanding.
Cinematography was underrated.
Yeah, it's appalling how thoroughly ignored that film was.
Yeah.
All right, so my panel, big fans of Moonrise Kingdom. But your Film Critics Association, you also do something interesting that I really like. You have a category for Best Ensemble. And I like that, just the idea, because a movie is more than just one person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that idea. Can you talk about the Best Ensemble, which you gave to Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah. and actually, there were a lot of good contenders this year, because you also had Lincoln, and you had Silver Linings Playbook is another really strong ensemble piece. It's just a lot of the actors in Moonrise Kingdom have worked with Wes Anderson before, so there's a real comfort and familiarity and warmth to that. And it's just they all work so beautifully together and off each other. And, you know, it would have been really nice to see Bruce Willis get a nod for supporting actor, because it's such a low-key turn. I know that was a really tough category this year. There were a lot of good possibilities, but yeah, they just played so wonderfully off each other.
But yeah, it's a true ensemble too, because apart from the two leads, I know a lot of fans of both Wes Anderson and Bill Murray found him to be a little underutilized in Moonrise Kingdom, but he stole the scenes he was in.
Yeah.
Jason Schwartzman in one scene.
Oh my God.
Almost made the movie for me.
Yep.
All right. Well, I hate to force you to stop talking about Moonrise Kingdom, but I'm gonna go ahead and say, all right, so the Central Ohio Area Film Critics Association like Moonrise Kingdom, but the Academy nor the Golden Globes. Well, I guess the Golden Globes did like it a little more than the Academy, but the Academy did not. So we will move on for just a second. But I can say that Moonrise Kingdom got a nomination for a Golden Globe Award, which will be given out this Sunday. And now that's probably because the Golden Globes, they divide the nominations into drama and then comedy or musical.
Well, that
right?
used to have, I think that used to have a bigger, it made for a bigger difference, but because the Academy Award for the last few years, they can have as many as 10 Best Picture nominations. There's more overlap now than there was in the past. But it does make for interesting sort of cross-reference in Best Lead performance, female and male, mm-hmm. because there are always 10 Golden Globes, and obviously at least 5 of those are going to get snubbed when it comes to Oscar time.
Right, right. So the Oscars, except for Best Picture, they stick with the 5 in each category, but then the Golden Globes break it out into having drama nominees and then comedy or musical nominees, which is interesting this year because Les Miserables is nominated for a lot of awards, and Les Mis is a drama, very dark movie, but it's nominated with all of these other more comedic performances for Golden Globes.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, the comedy / musical category is always really odd. I remember when Walk the Line. No. Yeah, Walk the Line. The Johnny Cash movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. I was going to say Walk Hard. That's why. Walk the Line won a bunch. It seemed very funny that was in the comedy / musical category, because technically speaking, it was not a musical, and it certainly was not a comedy.
No.
And it just seemed funny. I mean, the category is pretty loose, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be interesting on Sunday night to see what it comes down to in that category between Les Mis and Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
For the Golden Globes, the nominees for motion picture for comedy or musical is The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, Les Miserables, Moonrise Kingdom, Salmon Fishing in Yemen, and Silver Linings Playbook. It's a very diverse category, considering it has to be a comedy or a musical. Mm-hmm. So, do you think that that's a situation where Les Mis might win? But
Yeah, it's possible. It's so weird because the Golden Globes are kind of a weird thing in general, just because the Hollywood Foreign Press Association is the group behind it, and the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, as far as I know, is like less than 200 people, and it's
less prestigious than the Central Ohio Film Critics.
Some could argue and make a very good case for that. Yeah, and you know, there have been certain stories about what it the things that talent can do to maybe increase their chances with the Golden Globes that don't necessarily have to do with the film or the performances they give. So. You know, but at the same time, because of its timing, it has become very much an Oscar predictor. But as far as that particular category in Best Picture and Comedy and Musical, I think Les Mis has a better shot of getting recognition at this award ceremony than the Oscars. And that's in part just because it's such a strong year.
But you'll be secretly or not so secretly cheering for Moonrise Kingdom.
That would
to
be great.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
And with Silver Linings as like my backup. Yeah.
Right. So, Brad, do you think that the Golden Globes are Oscar predictors, or is it all just because of the timing and it's award season and that's what happens in January?
You know, I think the science of Oscar prediction is kind of its own cottage industry. I mean, that's why we're here today. Yeah. You know, especially with the split... We sort of predict a musical to come out of the comedy field, and that, you know, may have a shot at Best Picture overall. It's a real shame that I don't know when a comedy is an actual honest to God comedy is going to have a real shot at Best Picture in the Oscar race.
Since Annie Hall.
So a lot of ways, it's a shame that
I think
a musical is a front runner in there, because I'd love Moonrise. I would agree Silver Linings Playbook is kind of my darling of what's left in the Oscars.
You know, given the number of Oscar nominations Silver Linings Playbook got, I think it has a shot. I mean, I don't think it has the strongest shot, but I think it has a shot of taking Best Picture. It could be one of those where, you know, it starts rolling and then they just realize. Because the thing about Silver Linings Playbook is that it basically appeals to everybody. You know, it is a romantic comedy, and it takes a very traditional approach. And on the other hand, it's wildly irreverent and does not take a traditional approach. So it appeals to basically everybody. I've not met anybody who didn't love that film.
Mm-hmm. Even people who thought they weren't going to like it. Mm-hmm.
Well, we are going to be talking about Silver Linings Playbook, but then we'll also talk about an opposite, Zero Dark Thirty, for the drama aspect and all of the other movies that are nominated in just a moment. I'm Amy Jurevich, and this is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be back in just a minute.
And good morning. Thanks for listening to 89.7 NPR News. It's 11:19. I'm Debbie Holmes. We'll get back with more about the Oscars and the nominations in just a moment. We've got showers for today, possibly a thunderstorm as well. We'll reach about 60 degrees for tonight. And then for tonight, partly cloudy skies will drop down to 51 degrees. For Saturday, partly sunny with a chance of showers and a high of 61. Right now, 55 degrees. WOSU is supported by the McCoy Center for the Arts. National Geographic tornado hunter Tim Samaras will detail his harrowing job with scientific tidbits and footage from his adventures in the field. It's a show for all ages, Sunday, January 13th at the McCoy Center in New Albany. More at mccoycenter.org.
This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurevich. The Oscar nominations were announced yesterday, and Lincoln tops the list with 12 nominations. The epic story of a shipwrecked young man sharing a lifeboat with a tiger followed with 11 nominations. The musical movie Les Miserables, the romantic comedy Silver Linings Playbook, and the thriller drama about Americans trapped in Iran, Argo, also received a
significant number of nominations. But what was your favorite movie this year? Did your favorite film get snubbed by the Academy? Listeners, let us know what you think. 614-292-8513 or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. You can also post a comment to the All Sides Facebook page. With me in the studio to talk about the nominations and the best movies of the past year, Brad Keefe, film critic for Columbus Alive, Melissa Starker, freelance film critic, and Hope Madden, the other paper's film critic. And I want to make sure that we get to another movie. We have a scene from Zero Dark Thirty. And in this scene, Jessica Chastain and Kyle Chandler disagree on who the correct target is in Pakistan.
If you really want to protect the homeland, you need to get bin Laden.
This guy never met bin Laden.
You just want me to nail some low-level mullah crackadola so you can check that box on your resume that says while you were in Pakistan, you got a real terrorist. But the truth is, you don't understand Pakistan, and you don't know Al-Qaeda. Either give me the team I need to follow this lead, or the other thing you're going to have on your resume is being the first station chief to be called before a congressional committee for subverting the efforts to capture or kill bin Laden.
So Zero Dark Thirty is nominated for a Golden Globe. It's nominated for an Oscar for Best Picture. And Jessica Chastain is nominated for Best Actress as well. So Zero Dark Thirty, a dark movie, right? But and a dark topic. And is this film going to win? Is this a film Oscar bait?
I want to jump in first because I liked it the best of the three of us. No, I don't think it has a good chance of winning, principally because it was not nominated for Best Director, which I find one of our snubs. Director was, I think, the snub-heavy category this year. And without Kathryn Bigelow being nominated as well, I don't think that Zero Dark Thirty has much of a chance of winning, although I think it was really – I think actually it was a masterfully directed film, very restrained kind of movie that requires you to make your own choices, doesn't make decisions for you, doesn't tell you how to feel, which I think is one of the reasons why it's been so controversial. People want it to – state for you that certain things are simply wrong, and I think another reason is because it's not a character-driven film. The characters in the film are not particularly likable, but I think again that both of those things to me makes the film far more authentic than they would have been had some character said, "Oh, we've got to stop torturing these people; it's not getting us anywhere." Which would have been nice to hear from a moral standpoint, but really would not have fit the film at all and would have subverted, I think, what it was she was trying to do, which was just lay out the actual events. But I thought it was an incredibly powerful film. And again, I think it was really well directed. And Jessica Chastain, who is basically just brilliant. I think she's amazing. And she's amazing in this film as well. So I think she may have a shot, but I don't think the film does.
So for a differing opinion, Brad?
Well, differing in that I think it's good. Not great, and particularly the rest of the it's the fact that it didn't get the Best Director nod, which probably handicaps it in Best Picture, kind of surprises me, because the sort of critical mass is huge on this film. Like, you know, it's won its average grade on Metacritic, a website that sort of collects critics and gives them scores, is one of the highest ever. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, I try not to read ahead too much on a movie, but it was hard to not have that early critical praise leaking in. And when I finally saw the film back in early December, I was kind of shrugging, like, this is what's blowing everyone away. It's really great. It's just also flawed. And, you know, Bigelow, frankly, I didn't love Hurt Locker as much as everyone, which was a Best Picture winner.
Yeah, so Kathryn Bigelow was the director of Hurt Locker, Best Picture. She won Best. Did she
You're
win?
More of a Point Break man.
I am more of a Point Break. As a matter of fact, I couldn't help but Bigelow's one of her early films was Point Break, and I couldn't help. There were these moments of tone in the Bin Laden raid that made me think a little bit of the president bank robbery.
I can see that.
And Melissa, do you think is it too soon since actually this all happened for a movie about Osama bin Laden?
I wouldn't say that. I think that there's a lot of arguments you can make about this movie. I mean, obviously, it's been the subject of a fair amount of controversy because of its depiction of torture. I would totally disagree with the thought of making judgments or projecting anything onto a film that you haven't seen, as has been the case with some political pundits. I don't know. I had some personal issues with the film. I agree more with Brad than with Hope that I think maybe it was just building too much of a buildup by the time that we saw it, that our expectations were too high, perhaps. I do wish that I had a chance to see it a second time, because I do think that there are things about it that have some nuance that it would be nice to explore a second time. There were subtle things in the depiction of torture in the film that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And I don't really know if I want to say more than that until I do get a second chance to see it. But I will say, you know, it's definitely thought-provoking. And if this is a subject that is of interest to you, then you should – it's well worth checking out. Yeah, so I guess that's about it.
But like Lincoln, it's a movie that we know the ending of.
Yes,
and part
true.
Of my problem with it was the kind of tension that you do spend the whole movie waiting for the raid. That's this big point of mystery, and that scene delivers.
It does.
And outside it, Chastain, I don't think it was very character-driven. I would agree with that.
No, it's not character-driven.
Don't ruin ending.
But she is terrific.
Yeah. Well, another film I want to talk about that is nominated for Best Picture that surprised a lot of people in multiple ways is Beasts of the Southern Wild. And in this scene, Hush Puppy is a young girl. She is explaining where she and her father live.
One day, the storm's going to blow. The ground's gonna sink, and the water's gonna rise up so high, there ain't gonna be no bathtub, just a whole bunch of water. But me and my daddy, we stay right here. We's who the earth is for.
So Beasts of the Southern Wild, a surprise nominee for the Oscar for Best Picture. Also a surprise, the girl who plays Hush Puppy, whose voice you just heard, she was nominated for Best Lead Actress, the youngest nominee ever. And her name is Quvenzhané Wallace. Did I say it right, anyone?
I believe you did.
Okay. So
nice job.
So let's talk about Quvenzhané playing Hush Puppy in this film and talk about this film being nominated. Was anyone surprised to see it on the list?
It's unusual that the Academy has such a long memory for a movie that came out so early in the year last year.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, one of my biggest Best Picture snubs is one that probably suffered from coming out the wrong time of the year, and that was Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Which came out in August and is all but forgotten at this point. But it was a really great film. Beast of the Southern Wild. I'd love that this will probably lead to it coming back in theaters and more people can see it.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised to see it there, because it's just not, it is, it came out such a long time ago, and it's just really not the kind of film, I think, that Oscar voters tend to gravitate toward. It's definitely an independent film. I was more surprised to see the director nominated.
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
really quite shocking to me, given the... you know, the number of really big people who were available, who directed great films this year. But I loved Beasts of the Southern Wild because it was just so wildly original. And it was like being on a foreign planet. And I could never predict where we were going or what was going to happen. And all of the performances were so wonderful. And, yeah, Quvenzhané, I would take her home with me. So,
and wild originality is also something that's usually not rewarded in Oscar
exactly.
season.
So
that's...
Well, and Melissa, let's talk about that, the actress in a leading role category for the Oscars, because it has two historical things that happened in it. Quvenzhané Wallace for Beasts of the Southern Wild is the youngest nominee. And then we also have the oldest nominee, Emanuela
Riva.
Emanuela Riva for Amour. And then Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty, who we talked about. Jennifer Lawrence for Silver Linings Playbook. And Naomi Watts for The Impossible. So, Melissa, what do you think of this category, having the oldest nominee up against the youngest nominee? It's just, it's interesting.
It is really interesting. It's a really interesting year. I should say I have not had a chance to see The Impossible yet. Across the board of what I have seen, it's really strong. And I liked Beasts of the Southern Wild a little bit less than these two. I felt like it cast a really magical spell that sort of dissipated quickly. But she was amazing. And
for being six or seven?
She was like six when they started filming this. And the thought of placing the weight of an entire feature film on a six-year-old girl is, I mean, slightly masochistic, but once they if they pull it off, it's really amazing. And that's the thing. She just leaves you enwrapped. But again, it's a really strong category. You've got Jessica Chastain, who's just this amazing chameleonic actress that everything. I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing her in that horror film Mama that's coming out next week. And then you've got Jennifer Lawrence again. She's still relatively young, but she really has not given a bad performance. And in another great ensemble piece, she really, really stands out. And then Emmanuel Riva, it's just, yeah, again, we have none of us, unfortunately, have had a chance to see Amor yet.
Well, that's a good segue into Amor. So Amor is nominated for Best Picture and Actress in a Leading Role and also Best Foreign Film. And this was a surprise to a lot of people that it got so many nominations, considering that it has not been in theaters and none of my three critics have seen it. Does anyone know just a little bit about what it's about that you could say, Melissa?
Well, first off, Michael Haneke, the filmmaker, Austrian filmmaker, is definitely not a Hollywood guy. but basically, it's a film about an elderly couple, been together for years and years, and the wife starts experiencing some health problems, and it really looks at the minutiae and the real life aspects of dealing with the potential loss of a longtime partner. And so obviously devastating subject matter, but it really also speaks to the fact that the Academy voting block is fairly older. And, you know,
fairly older?
Yeah. I'm trying to be polite.
Okay.
And so, you know, this is something that's come up in the past in terms of the disconnect sometimes between Oscar nominations and what's popular. You know, the Dark Knight example from a couple of years back would be a good one.
Or this year.
Yeah.
That's
total
true.
Snub.
Yeah. But and again, Michael Haneke, Austrian filmmaker, has made only one English language film. And it was basically an indictment of America's movie-going culture. So called Funny Games. So, yeah, the fact that it also got a foreign language nomination, I would say it's probably a lock in that category.
Okay.
But we'll
Has
see.
Has anyone seen Emanuela Riva before in a film?
No.
Okay. I can think of.
Okay. Just curious. So, Brad has mentioned a couple snubs, so let's talk about a few Oscar snubs. Briefly, just in passing, you mentioned The Master and The Dark Knight Rises, another one that some people say it was its year. James Bond, this was its year. Skyfall should have been nominated. Brad, what do you think?
Oh, it was actually, I mean, this was a Bond film directed by a former Oscar winner, which is the first time that's happened as well.
So it's best chance to make
cinematography by a former Oscar winner, I believe.
Who did get nominated. Is an Oscar winner and multiple nominee.
Yep.
Skyfall was awesome. So what is
the idea with the Academy not picking the quote for to use that word not picking awesome films?
Well,
no, Dark Knight Rises. No,
the Dark Knight was that was kind of the year I think the Dark Knight was the best film the year it came out, and it was the year before the Academy extended the Best Picture nomination.
A lot of people say that's the reason that they extended it.
And that's the reason they extended it. But Dark Knight Rises got zero nominations this year. Explain that.
Which is wild
to me.
If you think about, I mean, even technical nominations.
Right.
You know, it's a bizarre. I personally think Dark Knight is a far superior film than Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
But I still think that it was a great movie. I didn't put it in my top 10 of the year, so I didn't look to see it as a Best Picture nomination. I mean, it wouldn't have, horrified me, but I wasn't.
Is there another
look for it there? But I was really surprised that it didn't get anything else.
Is there another film, Hope, that was on your top 10 that didn't make the 9 Best Picture nominees?
The Master and Moonrise Kingdom. They were the two big snubs, I thought. But I was really surprised. I was disappointed to see Life of Pi.
There. We haven't talked about that.
It was the most visually glorious movie I have maybe ever seen. It's overwhelmingly beautiful. And the fact that tiger really isn't there is mind-boggling, stunning, phenomenal. And so I think that it deserves as many technical awards as it can rake in. But Best Picture, no, not
Wait,
by
so
a long
he
shot.
He was acting and the tiger wasn't there. Maybe he should be Best Actor.
He was acting to a tennis ball, most likely. Yeah.
So in this film, it's a young man who is trapped on a lifeboat, trapped out at sea with a tiger. And they're sharing a lifeboat, basically.
Yeah.
Were you surprised, Melissa, to see it on the Best Picture list?
I guess I wasn't surprised because I felt like it was the kind of film that the Academy would put in there, because it is visually glorious, as Hope said, and it is there's an element of spirituality to it, and it's got this really fun fantasy element, but there's a little more me to it. But yeah, it's a gorgeous film, and I enjoyed watching it, but no, I wouldn't put it in that category.
And, oh yeah, it was the only film that was released in 3D, which makes a lot of money for Hollywood. So
yeah,
it's important
that
every year they remind you that 3D films are great. It was Hugo last year or 2 years ago.
Yep.
And they do one picture in there that is 3D to say,
I think that might be it.
And they do like Ang Lee, the Academy.
And they also like when directors take supposedly unfilmable novels and put them on the screen. And it was amazingly imaginative.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it.
Well, and related to this Best Picture category, Brent wrote on our Facebook page, "The Academy seems to have a problem with dark, edgy pictures. My favorite movies for the last 2 years were Melancholia."
Yes, that was mine.
"And The Master." Two great movies snubbed for Best Picture and snubbed for Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone agree?
Yes. I agree.
Yeah.
And if you want to talk Best Director snubs, we can go back
sure.
to the moment I started hating the Academy, which was the moment that Forrest Gump beat Pulp Fiction for Best Picture.
No, yeah, that probably was the turning point for me as well.
So Quentin Tarantino's Best Director snub is one of my biggest.
Well, I think across the board, most people were most surprised not to see Ben Affleck at the nod.
Right.
Also,
Ben Affleck directed Argo,
which
Quentin Tarantino directed Django Unchained.
But as you mentioned at the top of the show, Argo took in a lot of nominations. It was nominated in a lot of categories, including Best Picture, but not Best Director. And it's a directorial effort, that film. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of speaking parts. It goes from being a Washington, D.C. thriller to weaving effortlessly to sort of a Hollywood comedy to an international intrigue. It keeps you on the edge of your seat, again, even though you know how it ends. When that stewardess picks up that phone, I was like, oh, no.
It's true. It's true. It's true. And it's another one, like Silver Linings Playbook. It is such a crowd pleaser.
It is.
Yeah. I don't really get that with the Ben Affleck.
And Ben Affleck being snubbed for Best Director, I mean, he created a lot of suspense when there wasn't really that much in real life.
It's
yeah,
true.
It was people sitting in a house for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when it was like a tense spy thriller where nobody draws a gun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought in a lot of ways better than Zero Dark Thirty. Just to take another jab at Hope.
Yeah, I would agree with the Master. It's
oh,
another
my, yes.
one. It's another challenging film. It's another one that doesn't really spell anything specifically out for you. Although I am really happy to see Joaquin Phoenix in that Best Actor category. I think that would have been criminal if he had not been included.
And it will be criminal when he doesn't win.
Yeah,
but,
because
you know,
he won't.
So many of the. Awards across, they have ignored him completely.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman, deservedly so, has been nominated almost everyone. He's absolutely genius in this movie, as of course he always is, but I mean, he's just stunning in this film. But what Joaquin Phoenix does, and I know a lot of people, a lot of critics in Columbus think he was way over the top, but I was in awe of just this ferocity that he brought to this part.
Yeah, it was, I think it was the most sort of unhinged,
wild
performance,
yeah.
probably since Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree. And it's one of those performances where you think to yourself, maybe there's just something wrong with Joaquin Phoenix. You know, like, I don't think I want to have lunch with him. He is a freak.
All right. Well, and I did see The Master, and not being a critic, I will use Melissa's word. It is a challenging film.
Yeah.
Yes. Challenging. And this is All Sides Weekend. I'm Amy Jurevich, and in just a moment, we're going to be talking about Argo in a little more detail, and we'll talk about Silver Linings Playbook and much more. Listeners, what was your favorite movie this year? 614-292-8513. And this is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News.
I guess I can just never tell if guys are attractive in a loserly way or it's like they're just losers.
The new season of Girls begins Sunday on HBO. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from the show's creator and star, Lena Dunham, and our TV critic, David Bianculli, reviews the first episodes of the new season. Join us.
That's Fresh Air today at noon right here on 89.7 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Debbie Holmes. It's 11:41. We're going to have showers today, maybe even a thunderstorm. We'll get up to a near 60 degrees. And for tonight, we'll drop to 51 only, partly cloudy skies expected. Right now, 55 degrees. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News Director Mike Thompson and his panel provide an in-depth analysis of several topics, including Ted Strickland's decision not to seek a rematch with Governor John Kasich. That's Columbus on the Record tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurevich, and the Golden Globe Awards will be handed out this weekend. The Oscar nominations are fresh in everyone's mind, just coming out yesterday. Did your favorite movie make the cut? Listeners, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. We are talking with three local critics, Hope Madden with The Other Paper, Brad Keefe with Columbus Alive, and Melissa Starker, a freelance film critic. And again, listeners, if you want to talk about your favorite movie, 614-292-8513. Email us at allsides@wosu.org or post to our Facebook page. And Holly sent us an email. It just goes back to what we were talking about before. Beasts of the Southern Wild is the only superhero origin story I've ever connected with deeply and been moved by. It took my breath away. So Holly liked Beasts of the Southern Wild. And then Carl sent an email asking, why isn't there a science fiction section? I loved Looper.
I loved Looper.
So yeah. Did we.
Yeah, we were all big Looper fans.
Looper, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis,
and mm-hmm. another. I mean, who thought Bruce Willis was going to have two great performances in one year? No. I was slain.
All right. And then another film that we've mentioned a couple of times, but I want to talk about it, received several nominations and also a couple of snubs. It's Argo. And in this scene from Argo, Alan Arkin and John Goodman are discussing what type of movie should be the cover for the operation to rescue Americans from Iran.
How about the Horses of Achilles?
No good. Nobody does westerns anymore.
It's ancient Troy.
If it's got horses in it, it's a Western.
Hey, Kenny, please. Yeah, it's John Chambers about The Office Space. It doesn't matter. It's a fake movie.
If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit.
All right, so Argo, nominated for Best Picture, but I want to talk about Alan Arkin being nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I will say that I do enjoy Alan Arkin.
Oh, I love that man.
So let's talk a little bit more about Argo and this supporting actor category for the Oscars. The five nominees are Alan Arkin in Argo, Robert De Niro for Silver Linings Playbook, Philip Seymour Hoffman for The Master, Tommy Lee Jones for Lincoln, and Christopher Waltz for Django Unchained. Christoph Waltz, I'm sorry. So this is a heavy category. How do you pick? Brad, what do you think?
I would actually say that Leonardo DiCaprio was better than about three of those performances.
Oh, yes, and that's another snub. So Leonardo DiCaprio.
Although I'm kind of glad because he would have split the Django Unchained vote, and I think Waltz is who I'm really hoping wins this category. But and also interesting, we keep talking about The Master. One of the things that threw people off about The Master was, you know, the name of it implied that it was a character study of Philip Seymour Hoffman's character. Mm-hmm. And you see he's bumped down to supporting, which I think gives him a much stronger case.
Especially this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I knew he wouldn't be there, but it would have made me so happy to see Matthew McConaughey get on there for
which
Magic
movie?
Mike. I know, well, for almost anything he did this year, but Magic Mike in a supporting role, that was where he was just, he was unhinged. He was just magnificent.
Matthew McConaughey, Magic Mike is a movie about strippers.
Yeah. Right. And it's not a good movie. But
that's not an Oscar movie.
But, well, people get nominations, especially supporting turns in movies that aren't very good. That happens sometimes, you know.
Meryl Streep and Iron Lady.
Right.
Yeah.
But Leonardo DiCaprio, he's the big snub. And, you know, Tommy Lee Jones for Lincoln, he did a great job, but there were so many great supporting turns in Lincoln that he really wasn't my favorite, to be honest.
So does Alan Arkin have a good shot for Argo? No?
Yeah. It's such a strong category. I almost wish that Alan Arkin and John Goodman together could have a nomination.
I agree.
They were so great together.
And also to go back to the very self-congratulatory Academy, it is Alan Arkin nominated as a Hollywood executive.
Exactly.
They love seeing themselves.
That's
up
really
on screen.
True. But, you know, as they mentioned when they named the nominees, there's nobody here who hasn't won at least one. It's a tough category right there.
Which is where DiCaprio should have been.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. And we have Ron on the phone from Steubenville, and he wants to mention a film that I actually don't know that I've heard of. Ron, what's your question?
Well, The Word. I think it was a fantastic movie. Also, Lawless and Twixt, I think, are both ignored. But the Word, fantastic acting, great story, original script. I just don't understand the Academy completely ignoring new or non-big budget films. And also, I think the Academy has to change their rules so that straight to DVD or web movies have to start being included. It's a new era. It's not the day of the two big grand openings. It's just personal opinion.
All right. Well,
it was Lawless and what was the other?
The Words.
No, the third was Lawless and
Twixt.
Twixt.
Lawless, The Words, and Twixt.
Oh, no, Twixt.
Yeah. Can you tell us what that is?
Twixt was a movie that was on limited release. Roman Polanski, I don't know if you've heard of it.
All right, you have stumped the panel, Ron, but we will take up The Words, I think, and Lawless. So what do you think about The Words? Is that, can you tell me? I don't even remember this movie.
It was Bradley Cooper as well.
Okay.
And he is a writer who stumbles across a journal written in, he buys a, you know, a suitcase, a valise, I'm sure is what it was really called. and he finds this journal hidden in a pocket, and he's a struggling writer, and he realizes how beautiful the story is. And his wife reads it, cries, weeps. I always knew you were such a good writer. And so anyway, he winds up publishing it and living off of
it now.
Fame.
Okay. I don't think I knew the title. Okay.
I have to be honest. I was not a fan of the film.
Okay.
Yeah.
I felt like there was a lot structurally that was a problem, in that it was a story in a story in a story, and also Jeremy Irons plays an old man from Philadelphia. I'm sorry, what? you know, it's. I thought that there were some. Strong elements to the film, but on the whole, I was not a fan.
And then Ron also mentioned Lawless. Brad or Melissa, do you think?
Yeah.
Was that?
You know, the filmmakers involved with that, they made another film a few years ago called The Proposition, that if he liked Lawless, I would definitely suggest he check that out. There were things I really liked about Lawless, and I think that Tom Hardy, who plays a role in it, it's basically, you know, a Prohibition-era film. He's another really interesting actor that always brings something good to whatever role he's in. But that was another one. I liked it. I liked a lot of the people involved in it. Nick Cave is a terrific musician, is proving to be quite an interesting screenwriter. But I would say go see The Proposition, or grab The Proposition if you haven't. And if you haven't seen Silver Linings Playbook, if you were a fan of The Words, I think you'd be really surprised at how strong a performance Bradley Cooper gives in Silver Linings Playbook.
Well, then let's use that as a segue to talk about Silver Linings Playbook in a little more detail. Carolyn on Facebook wrote that she really liked Silver Linings Playbook. It captured mental health issues so honestly, and it made her laugh with joy at the candor of the movie. So in this scene, after a stint in a mental institution, a former teacher, he moves back in with his parents and tries to reconcile with his ex-wife. But things get more challenging when Pat meets Tiffany, a mysterious girl with problems of her own. In this scene, Bradley Cooper, played by who plays Pat, and Jennifer Lawrence, who plays Tiffany, are talking in a diner.
Why did you order raisin bread?
Why did you order tea?
Because you ordered raisin bread.
I ordered raisin bread because I didn't want there to be any mistaking it for a date.
It can still be a date if you order raisin bread.
It's not a date. So how's your thing going? Dancing thing.
That's good. How's your restraining order?
So Silver Linings Playbook was nominated for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor and Supporting Actress.
Director.
Oh, yes. The list just does go on and on. So is this, is this movie going to pick up a few awards, or is it one of those movies that's in every category, but it's just not going to make it?
I hope so. I mean, it's the highest ranked movie I have of the Best Picture nominees. It's the one I would really be rooting for. Like, if Silver Linings Playbook had a big night, which I don't think it will, I don't see Bradley Cooper cracking that. Yeah. Although it's interesting because Bradley Cooper, you read a lot of reviews that say he's surprisingly effective, because I think a lot of people don't like Bradley Cooper. There's a sort of smugness to him generally in some of his performances.
I think,
and he's so winning in this.
Yeah, he's great. And mm-hmm. I think this is the film. I don't think he's going to win an Oscar for it, but I think this is a film that moves him out of Ryan Reynolds' category and maybe into Airspace Clooney. You know, I think this is his step from one to the next. I'm not saying he's full on Clooney, but I'm saying he's, you know, that's how Clooney got out of it. That's how Brad Pitt got out of it. They stopped being just a Ryan Reynolds and started being actual actors. And I think this might be the film that
he doesn't
that
have
does
to just be pretty
him.
To look at.
He doesn't. Oh.
But I think its best shot at an Oscar is also the one I'm rooting for the most, and it's Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think she has I think she's got the strongest
contention.
Better than
Jessica Chastain.
I think that her biggest competitor is probably Naomi Watts from The Impossible. Not as much because I think it's a better performance, although it's an outstanding performance, but because both Jessica Chastain and Jennifer Lawrence are so young, and they clearly are going to be nominated again and again and again. I mean, they're brilliant, ferocious, wonderful performers. And Naomi Watts has been nominated before. She hasn't won yet. Mm-hmm. And I have the feeling, I mean, that, you know, it's sketchy, but, you know, I think she's got I'm not going to say she's even the front runner, because I think it's kind of a three-way tie there for me. But I think that she gives Jennifer Lawrence the biggest run, I think.
I'm not familiar with the movie The Impossible.
It's a tsunami film, and Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts are the parents.
I don't know why. I guess that name just doesn't connect it to the tsunami film for me. Okay, they should have called it the tsunami film.
Right.
No, I'm sorry. That is my fault. But yes, okay. Naomi Watts, The Impossible. And we have Rita on the line. Rita in Columbus, what's your comment?
Hi, yeah. I was watching the Broadcast Film Critics Association Awards last night on another channel here in Columbus, and really was struck by how much broader their categories are. I mean, they had awards for action movie, for science fiction and horror movie. And do you think that with all the criticism the Oscar nominations are getting this year, it may force them to expand their categories or expand the number of director nominations in future years? Because this was a very strong movie year, and it really seems a shame that the nominations are getting so much criticism and there were so many snubs.
Okay, let's see what our panel thinks. That the Oscars often get criticized. I mean, they were getting criticized. That's why they expanded Best Picture to up to 10. What do you think? Do you think they need to be more loose?
It's a shame that they can't be better about actually considering the best films that were made in a year. You know, the fact that they expanded to the animated category a few years ago was kind of in response to, well, Pixar is making these amazing films, but mm-hmm. they're not really Best Picture material, so we'll create a new category. You know? And if there is an action, we create an action movie category as kind of the consolation prize, right, because we don't consider action films
to be films.
Yes.
Right. And are they ghettoizing all of these things by creating these separate little niches?
I don't think there's a chance there will ever be a horror film category, because several years ago when there was a little salute to horror films, it was amazing how many people hated that, because people who watch the Oscars and people who vote for the Oscars do not care. And to be honest, a really large population of moviegoers hate horror films, like hate them. I'm not among that group. But it would surprise me if they were to have these little branch off subcategories, because the show is too long to begin with, and they wind off spinning off a bunch of the awards into a non-broadcast program already. And I can't see them adding more categories in this way. The best way to address it is to broaden the number of voters. You're an Academy voter until you die, and most of them, most of them are in their 70s, and you know. So I think I was shocked that the Best Marigold Hotel did not get any nominations. I thought, oh, this is going to be all over the place. This is this year's The Help. This is going to be everywhere.
I was going to say a happy kind of shock. Yeah.
let me ask you a question then. Is it because people always talk about how no one knows how to vote for cinematography or film editing and those kind of categories, and they still make it into the big broadcast. So maybe does something like cinematography and film editing need to be moved out so that something that is more accessible to people moved into the Oscars?
I hope. I mean, cinematography is one of my favorite categories, so I would really hope not. And voters, they're cinematographers. They're film editors. I mean, that's who gets to vote. So it's not like nobody. Right.
That's the thing.
They get to nominate them.
Yes.
Right.
And then, but then everybody gets to vote. Everybody in this. So, I mean, I think there are some that we could still, that could still be spun off. But I would be shocked if there was a best sci-fi, best action. And like Melissa said, you know, Amour is nominated for a ton of awards. It has no shot at winning Best Picture because it's nominated for Best Foreign Language Film, and so it will win that. And so it really does, in a way, it gives them sort of a condescending nod. Yes, Looper was great, not good enough to be Best Film, but, you know, let's not ignore it completely. So, I mean, it's kind of a left-handed compliment to begin with.
Well, we're down to the last couple of minutes, and so the 85th Annual Academy Awards are scheduled to be held Sunday, February 24th, which gives everyone more than a month to see some of these movies if they want to see them before the actual Oscars are awarded. So what is still in theaters that you think that people should take the time to go see? Brad?
My Christmas movie, Django Unchained, which would also be, it's a total long shot.
It is nominated for Best Picture.
It is nominated for Best Picture. That would make me grin, and is terribly unlikely. It's probably about 200-1 odds of winning that.
Oh, yeah, there's no chance. But it is a fun movie to see.
Oh, yeah.
But the hope is, you know, these nominations tend to bring films back.
Right.
That, you know, for the completists that are like, oh, I want to see Life of Pi. I didn't see that. And I think this will probably usher Beasts of Southern Wild back into theaters, which is one that I definitely recommend that you see there.
Yeah.
Melissa, what do you think?
Yeah, it's so hard. I love Django Unchained. That's definitely not a movie for everybody. If you're looking for more of a movie for everybody, then I would go with Argo and Silver Linings Playbook. And if you want to be challenged, I would go more for Lincoln and Zero Dark Thirty. And I just have to mention it because it hasn't come up. John Hawkes, Best Actor, The Sessions, snub.
Huge snub.
Oh, he wasn't nominated.
No, he wasn't.
But Denzel Washington was.
Right. Well, to be fair, Denzel Washington's performance was great. The movie just wasn't very good.
I didn't even notice. Okay, and Hope, we have just a few seconds remaining. What do you think people should go see?
Zero Dark Thirty opens this weekend. I think you should go and judge it for yourself and don't pay any attention to what other people might be saying.
And, like us.
And really quickly, will Amour come to the theaters? Will we get to see it?
It's the kind of thing that usually pushes it up.
Yeah, right now it's currently scheduled to open town February 15th.
All right. So go see Amour, go see Zero Dark Thirty. There's a lot of the movies on the Best Picture list you have the possibility of actually seeing in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Well, this has been All Sides Weekend, and I'm Amy Jurevich. Thank you to Hope Madden, film critic for The Other Paper.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you to Brad Keefe, film critic for Columbus Alive.
Thank you, Amy.
And thank you, Melissa Stark, our film critic, freelance film critic.
Thank you.
And this is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media. Thank you.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Foundation, who can help strategically prepare now for the coming changes in charitable tax rates. There's a reason why the Columbus Foundation is the ninth largest community foundation in the world. Its scale and experience works for our community. More online at columbusfoundation.org.